Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Yud. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 16 lines from the bottom of Daf Yud. You will notice immediately a bow tie shape and a number 2. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads Ketzad Hichsharti Miktsas Nizko Chavti B'Tashlumei Nizko Kehechshir Kol Nizko. This phrase is in effect a quote from our Mishnah, and in the Gemara we will see a brisa that elaborates on that which was taught in the Mishnah. And the idea behind this Mishnah quote is a person who makes a partial form of damage, and nevertheless, even though in terms of the total picture he's only done part, nevertheless he's obligated to pay for the entire damage. HaGemor mevia kidugma ha'chofer bor tisha bo acher v'shlimoi la'asor. The Gemara will, in our brisa, you will see this as an example. One person dug a pit 9 handbreadths deep, 9 tfachim deep, and someone else came along and dug out a 10th tefach of depth. The Tanaic source will tell us that the fellow who dug the 10th tefach, he is held responsible. In the Gemara itself, as far as the general structure of the Gemara, after presenting that topic, the 10th tefach of depth with regard to a bor, and the guilt being upon his shoulders alone, even though, as far as the total of the 10 handbreadths, he dug only one, the last one, the 10th. Nevertheless, he is held responsible for everything. And when we say for everything, we're going to wait till we get into the Gemara to see what do we mean by everything. The triangle marking that you see a bit later is explained on the side under our mivne, our structural note, which says v'ha'ika ha'gemara she'eles. Now that phrase v'ha'ika is highlighted in the triangle. Ha'gemara she'eles, the Gemara will be asking v'ha'ika oid dugmois. There are, in fact, other examples, so it seems. Besides the case of a 9 tefach deep pit dug out by one person, and the 10th tefach being dug out by a second individual. So as you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice these triangles, and we've numbered them 1 and 2, you could see at the bottom of Amud Aleph. 3 and 4 appear in the upper half of Amud Beis. Now the Gemara. We should point out, by the way, that the reason for the bow tie shape we featured in our previous year is that the Gemara, the Gemara understood that the Mishnah itself was unconventional, was difficult to understand in terms of the Hebrew of the Mishnah, and the need for the Gemara to explain the different phrases appeared in our first bow tie and now in our second one, with which we open up today's text. So the Gemara says, Tonu Rabbonan, Hichsharti Miktsas Nizko, which basically means someone created part of the damage factor. Chafti b'tashlume nizko, kechshir kol nizko. He is obligated to compensate as if he made the entire source of damage. So again, the theme is, you did in physical terms part, and in legal terms, total. Ketzad, what is an example of that? Hachofer bor tishobo acher v'shlimo asora. A pit of 9 tvachim was dug out, 9 handbreadths, and someone else came along and completed it to a 10th handbreadth. The term completed will take on greater meaning as we go through the Gemara. And the ruling is ho'achron chayav. And by saying that the achron is chayav, the impression is that no matter what happens in terms of the pit, whether an animal is injured in the pit by falling into it or the animal dies by falling into it, the last person, the one that dug out that 10th handbreadth, is the one responsible. The approach we just said is udalo kerebi. But take note of the numbering that we have. First of all, we have an aleph. The aleph is followed by a beis, which you can see in the Gemara. You see Iko Diamri a couple lines later, the squiggle under Iko Diamri means in a different version of presenting the Gemara. So aleph, the first version, we're saying is that our source that we just read, which said Achron Chayav, is not like Rebbe. Take note as well, there's a 1, and then Rav Papa appears number 2, a bit later. So that within version Aleph, within the first Lashon, the first version of this section, there are two, we'll call two stages, two opinions. So the first opinion within this version is that the source is unlike Rebbe. Desanya, hachofer bor tishol bo acher v'shlimu l'asora. Mr. 1 dug out 9 tefachim. Mr. 2 came along and dug out a 10th tefach of depth. Achron chayav, the last person, the person who dug out the 10th handbreadth, he is totally responsible. Whether the victim, the animal that dies or is merely injured. Rebbe Omer, achron lemisa. Rebbe says that in terms of guilt, if in the event that the animal dies, only the last one is responsible for compensating, for offering restitution for the death of an animal. Only 10 tefachim is viewed as capable of killing an animal. If an animal dies in something, that, let's say, of 9 tefachim of depth, that's considered unusual, and we cannot hold the owner of the pit or the digger responsible. So 10 tefachim, though, is a depth sufficient to kill an animal. So if the animal dies, the last person alone bears responsibility. Achar shnehem lenezikin. However, when it comes to damage that results, if the animal fell into a 10 tefach depth deep bore, 9 of which dug by one and the 10th dug by someone else, both diggers bear responsible for the damage that that results. Once again, the animal got hurt, damaged, but didn't die. So the 9 tefach digger also bears responsibility as far as Rebbe is concerned. And we dashed underline Shnehem Linezikin because that's the point according to this approach, which contrasts Rebbe with the source we read before, that said, Achron Chayov, that the last one is guilty for not only death, but the last one, we mean the fellow that dug the 10th tefach, is responsible not only for the death of the animal, but also exclusively responsible for the damage. Rebbe doesn't agree with that. Rav Papa, a second approach, it says, Omar, that the source that said, Achron Chayov, that source is not across the boards chayav, but lemisa. He's chayav. The achron is chayav and lemisa v'divrei kol. Everyone agrees. Rebbe agrees with that as well. That if it comes to just a matter of death of the animal, only the last one bears responsibility. Iko diamri, another version of this discussion. Lema Delo Karebi. Shall we say that the source above that said Ho'achron Chayav, that only the last one is culpable, is unlike Rebbe? Omar Rav Papa. Rav Papa says, no, we don't have to say that it's not like Rebbe. Lamisov Adivri Hakol. The source that mentioned Ho'achron Chayav, just the last one, is guilty. The term guilt is in terms of death. When the animal dies, then we say only the last one is guilty. And that is something that Rebbe agrees with. Maskif lo Rebbe Zera. So Rebbe Zera asks the question, the lead-in question to that which we featured before, Vasuleka, are there no other examples whereby we can say that even if, though you did part, it's as if you did everything? V'ha'ika, is there not the case of Mosar Shoro l'chamisha b'nei Odom? A man entrusted his ox to five people that they should watch it. U'posha boy echod mehen v'hizik. And one of them was irresponsible and didn't watch it. He walked off the job and didn't watch the animal, and it went and damaged. Chayav, so he bears responsibility. That would sound like our Mishnah. It would sound like an additional case to the Chofer Bor Tisha B'Achirishim La'Sora. Well, what are the circumstances? Hechi Domi. Ilema, you'll notice we've swirled line Ilema and the next line Ela, just to highlight the stages in analysis. Ilema debalav ihu lo have mintar. If you're to believe, to suggest that without him, the animal would not have been guarded, then pshita de ihu ka'ovid. Then it's obvious that he is responsible. Obvious on the grounds that he is not considered having done just part of the damage or causing just part of the damage, but he is totally responsible. He has done, in effect, his irresponsibility is the sole reason for the damage. So it's not like the case of a tenth handbreadth, when there were already nine handbreadths of depth in the case of the boar. There, the fellow who dug the single tenth handbreadth, he created only partial, we'll say partial additional damage capability. One tefach in isolation would have done nothing, wouldn't have resulted in any damage, any perceptible damage, we'll say. So that one tefach out of a previous nine, or in addition to a previous nine, that is an act of partial damage, and there we said he's responsible for everything. But in this case, without him, the animal wasn't watched at all. So it's not parallel, and hence it doesn't fit into the Mishnah. And also, what was Rabbi Zero's intention in suggesting the case of Mosar Shoro L'Chamisha? Elo debalav ihu nami mintar. Maybe you want to say that without this fifth fellow who walked off the job, it would have been guarded anyway. The four people would have been capable of watching it. Well then, my COVID, why, what did he do by walking off the job? He shouldn't be held responsible for anything. So as far as looking at the case of the ox entrusted to five people, it would appear that it's an all or nothing situation. And that's not parallel to the case of the pit, where there was partial action resulting in total culpability. Maskif lo Rav Sheshes v'ho'ika marbe b'chavila. Is there not the case of adding firewood? Chavila literally is a bundle, a bundle of wood, adding to a fire, adding firewood to an existing fire. Rashi, you'll notice, is we'll say out of place. The Rashi for this appears at the top part of Omid Beis. Marba b'chavilos, Rashi that we look at together, is on the second narrow line of the Rashi on Omid Beis. There he says, Sheribo chavilos zmoros, he added branches, b'hadlokish shochavero, to a fire started by his friend. And through the adding of the firewood, he enabled the fire to draw closer to the neighbor's grain piles. And we're trying to say that as a result, the latter individual added the firewood, he should be held responsible, not the first one who lit the fire initially. So now we want to analyze this. How do we describe Mar b'chavila hechi domi? The Gemara continues on the top of Omid Beis, and again you see we've squiggled on the line E and called this Aleph, stage Aleph, and then at the end of the line Ela, stage Beis. So E de balav ihu lo ozla pshita. If without his addition of the wood, the fire would not have moved any further than its original position, well then it's obvious that he is held responsible. And the first one isn't obligated whatsoever. This would not have fit into the Mishnah's scheme of things. Rashi explains, Pshita, Veloma hu, Veloma have lon lemisne. Why would we have wanted to teach this in as part of the Mishnah's example, as part within the Brisa that we saw with the Chofer Bor Tisha Bo Acher Vishlimu La'asora? It's not parallel. Hare Harishon Lisiya Klum. In this case of the fire, where the initial fire wouldn't have gone anywhere, wouldn't have gone any closer to the neighbor's Godish, the Choma de Shovik Leimam Yavozil. Had we had just the first individual's action and left things at that, the fire would have died out. Aval Chofer Bor Tisha. But in the case of digging the first 9 tfachim, he's not like the guy that lit the first fire. In the case of digging the first 9 tfachim, Rov Misaso Huose, he is actually making the majority of the depth that results eventually in the death. That's the expression, Rov Misaso Huose. Eloh Achron Mekarva, just that the last one made it nearer, made it more imminent, made it more potent. So if these are the circumstances that without the second person's intervention, nothing would have happened by way of damage as far as the first fire is first one to light the fire, then it doesn't belong in our source, and it's obvious that only the last one is responsible. Ella de balav ihu ozla. Maybe we'll say that in the case of the chavila marba b'chaliv chavila, without his additional firewood, the fire would have reached the neighbor's pile of grains anyway. Well, then my covid. What did the second guy do? He didn't create a situation that wouldn't have been anyway. So again, you see that the case of Marba b'chavila does not parallel the digger of the 10th tefach. Maskiflor Popovo Ika Hadesanya. Rav Popa says, is there not the example taught in the following Tanaic source? Up till now, let us point out, we weren't introducing Tanaic sources as attempted parallels. Here, Rav Popa, in fact, does that. And what's the case? Chamisha Shiyoshvu al Safsal. 5 people were sitting on a bench. Al Safsal Echon. Velo Shibruhu. And the bench did not break. It was sturdy enough to hold the weight of 5 people. Obo Echon V'yoshav Olov V'shibro. And another person came along, sat down, and the bench broke. Ho'achron Chayov. The last one is held responsible. V'yomer Rav Papa, kagoin Papa Baraba. Rav Papa says an example of an individual that would cause that to happen is Papa Bar Abba, a corpulent, obese, heavyweight individual. Hechi Domi, what are the circumstances? I lema de balav ihu lo isbar, if without this last person's appearance, the bench would not have broken. Pshita. Well, then it's obvious that he is solely responsible, and it's not similar to the case of the pit at all. In the case of the pit, the one who dug the first 9 tfachim created a level of damage, a pit that's capable of hurting, of damaging, although not capable of killing. So that the first, in the case of the 9 tfachim, he clearly contributes to whatever damage happens later on. We look together at Rashi, Pshita, Delo Domi Labor. The case of the bench and the sixth person is not like the case of the pit. Sheol Rishon Goram Nazikin, Vahorag Chetzio Rubo. The first one that who dug the 9 tfachim is caused damage, created a pit capable of causing damage, and he, as far as if the animal died after the 10th tefach was dug, well, the guy that dug the 9, he killed half the animal or the majority of the animal. Ela mishum hachi hu demiftar. The reason that the first 9 tefach digger is exempt in the case of the animal's death, he can say ilav ata, if not for you, your 10th tefach, have a mitzvah v'lo have a mayis. The animal would have simply been injured and not died. But you see that he has contributed to the problem. But in the case of the bench, the first 5 people, lo shibru klum, kozman shelo bozeh, no damage to the bench, no breaking would have happened until as long as this 6th person didn't come along. So you see there's a lack of parallel. Ella, so we go on in our Gemara, stage 2, the balav ihu nami isbar. We're suggesting that without him, it would have broken anyway. Well, then, my Govin, what did he do? The 6th person shouldn't be held responsible for anything. So once again, you see, it's all or nothing. Either it's clear that he is solely responsible, or he bears no responsibility. Therefore, there's lack of parallel to the case of the 9 tefach and subsequent 1 tefach in the case of the pit. Where in the case of the 9 tefachs, we recognize that he contributed to the damage, and yet he is exempt from payment. At this point, you see that we have a bracketed section of Gemara. If you skip the brackets momentarily, you'll see the Gemara resumes the questioning. The su leko v'ha'iko, is there not the following case? And a Tanaic source will appear, also suggesting something parallel to our case of the pit. We have a starred note on the side where the brackets begin, which reads, Achra Sagram, Gemara Mamshicha im Sidra Sakushios Voiko. After the brackets, the Gemara continues the series of questions introduced by the phrase Vehoiko. Are there no additional examples to the Kedix of the pit? Besocha Sagram, Gemara Mazbira es Hamoker, Shel, Hamisha Shioshva al Safsalech. Within the brackets, the Gemara explains the source. Rashi points out that as opposed to triangles 1 and 2, where the Gemara didn't try to explain further what the circumstances were, there we weren't dealing with a Tanaic source. Once we present, in case triangle 3, a Tanaic source, and on the one hand we say it doesn't parallel the case of the pit, we still have an obligation to offer an explanation of the Tanaic source, to explain the circumstances, what happened. We say the last one is chayav, and certainly it wouldn't be teaching me something that's totally obvious. Otherwise, I wouldn't need it as a Tanaic source. We don't. The Tanaic sources, generally speaking, unless otherwise said, don't teach us the obvious. So here, the Gemara gets off the, we'll say, the attempt to parallel the bench story with the pit. But nevertheless, let's try and understand it. So we continue now with the bracketed section. Soif soif masnisa hecha mitarza. After all is said and done, how are we to explain the masnisa, the Tanaic source involving the bench and the fellows that were sitting there? Lo tzricha, the circumstances are necessary to be taught. In other words, the source is needed to be taught. De belaviu have misbar betray shoy. Without the corpulent person showing up at the end, it would have broken after 2 hours. Now, with his coming on the scene, it broke faster, within 1 hour. The Amri lay, the original people sitting there, have the claim against the last guy. You can't hold us responsible. Ilav at, if you wouldn't have shown up, hava yasvina tvei purta v'kaimen, we would have sat just a little bit longer and gotten up. So we have no responsibility. Just to repeat, it's true the bench would have broken after 2 hours, but they would have gotten up very shortly after this fat man appeared, and nothing. They would have been responsible for nothing. For lema lahu, why can't the final man, the obese man, say, ilav atun, if not for you, bedidi lo have a misbar, with me alone, it would not have broken. We take a look at Rashi. Rashi that we'll look at together, you'll see, is found about halfway down the page. V'lema lahu, let him say to them, ilav atun, b'didi l'chud lo have a misbar, with me alone the bench would not have broken. V'atem kishiyoshafti, and you guys, when I sat down, hoyolochem lamoid, you should have gotten up. U'midolo amadetem, atem kamoni shibartem, and since you remain sitting there, you, like me, are participants in the damage. V'gabi mashlimbor la'asor lekolak shuyeh, with regard to the case of digging the 10th tefach in the bore in the pit, this would not be a relevant argument. What could the first guy who dug the first 9 tefachim have done? Once it's dug out, it's dug out. It's not like the 9 tefach digger is the parallel to the first 5 people on the bench. In the case of the first 5 people on the bench, you see an argument against them. Hey, you guys should have gotten up. That, as Rashi said, could not have been raised as a point regarding the first 9 tochem of pit. The Gemara continues. Lo tzricha, the case of the bench is necessary to be taught, however, as follows. De bahadi de somich behu tovar, as he was leaning on them, it broke. There's a Rashi on this somach behu. I should read the Rashi just a bit before. Lo tzricha de bahadi de somach alayhu. And here we have a major turnaround in the explanation, at least as far as the Rashi text that we have is concerned. And that is that without this last heavy, weighty individual, the bench wouldn't have broken at all. Here you can see the change from the description before of having broken a little while longer, after 2 hours instead of 1 hour. Here, no. If the last fellow had not come along, it wouldn't have broken at all. the karma is pshita. You'll say, well, if that's the case, it's obvious that the last guy to come on the scene, the fat man, he is responsible. Lo tzricha de lo yoshev alav. That heavy individual didn't actually sit on the bench. Elo omar al raglov. Rather, he stood on his feet. V'nismach aleihem. He leaned on them. V'yos lashmina de kechi kegufay domi. And the point, the chiddush, the novel point of this source is that your force is like your body. Now we go back to the Gemara, and we said that he was leaning on them, and as a result of his leaning on them, so then they weren't able to get up as he claimed they could have done. This is a response to that. We said that he, the last fellow, would have been able to say to them, you know, when I showed up, you should have gotten up. No, but he leaned on them. And the Gemara says, if you're going to claim that this is obvious, that he's responsible, mal detema, without this, I would have thought, kechay lav kegufo domi, that mere force is not like his actual sitting on the bench. Kamashman de kechay kegufo domi, that the force that he applied on them is like his own sitting on the bench. Decholecha de gufo tovar, kechay nami tovar. That wherever his body, his sitting on the bench directly would have caused its breaking, so too his force upon them is doing the same thing. So just to review the structural element of this Gemara, and that is that the case of the bench is not parallel to the case of the pit, where the person who dug the 10th tefach is responsible for all that happened, even though he did only part of the depth of digging. In this case, the fellow who leaned on them basically did all of the damage. As we saw before in the Rashi, that had he not come along, the first people would not have caused any breaking to happen whatsoever. Hence, the case is not included as an additional example of what the Mishnah spoke of, and the source, though, had its own chiddush, and that is kochay kegufo. The force that he applied on them is as if he actually sat on the bench. We continue. Vesu leka. Are there no other examples in addition to the pit example? Voika ha desanya. Is there not the following? Hiku asora bnei adam be'eser maklis. 10 people wielding clubs or sticks beat one individual, and the person you'll see dies. Bein bebasachas, bein bozachar zeh umeis. Whether they beat him at once, 10 people clubbing him at once, or in succession, one after the other, and the victim dies. Kulan pturim. They are all exempt. We don't know whose force is responsible for his death. Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Omer Bozachar Zeh, in the case of one after the other, in the successive clubbings, Ho'achron Chayov, B'nei Shekirei Ves Misoso. The last one is responsible, for he hastened, literally drew his death near. He hastened his death. Well, here you have a case that would seem to parallel the pit. 9 people were beating on him, and according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, the 10th one who clubbed him, he is held responsible, even though it's clear that with his clubbing alone, the guy wouldn't have died. So why is this case of Hiku Asur B'Nam not included along with the case of the pit? Number one, Bekatla Lo Komairi. Our Tanaic source before, which was explaining the Mishnah, was not dealing with capital cases. With katlo is with killing a person. Viboyasema, Beplukta lo kamayri. Another approach is, this is a very fine parallel, but it's a parallel only if you accept Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira's approach. This source represents a source concerning which there is plukta, there is disagreement. We did not want to include cases of disagreement. The Gemara says, "Velo, is that so? V'ho ukimnon delo kerebi." But we established before that the source was not like Rebbe, and that didn't hesitate us. Deter us from teaching the case of the pit. And by the way, we have a little star, and you can see the reference to Omid Aleph. If you look up for the parallel star on back on Omid Aleph, you'll see that it said on that line Udalo Kerebi. So once you taught a source that is in the example of the case of the pit, a controversial example, and it's taught, teach this as well. The Gemara answers, there's a difference in levels of we'll say, argument. Delo kirebi ukarabonon mukminan. To teach an example that's not like Rebbe, but is in accordance with the majority opinion, the opinion of the Rabbonon, that we will teach. Mukminan, we will establish, we will teach, we will present. The law follows the Rabbin, the law, the halacha generally follows the majority opinion. In the suggestion to include the Hiko Aser B'nei Adam as a parallel to the case of the pit, you would have had to teach Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira's opinion. Ki Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira v'lo ki Rabbanan lo mukminan, to choose a minority, a single opinion over the majority opinion, that we will not set up, that we will not do. So the case of the pit, the 9 tefach and 1 tefach final digger, remains as an isolated example of what the Mishnah had taught. Hichsharti miksas nisko, part of the damage was created, and chafti b'tashlumei nisko keich shekol nisko, and he is obligated to pay full restitution. The Gemara continues. Chafti b'tashlumei nisko. The word tashlumei is the feature of this Gemara. Chafti b'nisko loy kotoni. The Mishnah doesn't say chafti b'nisko, but rather elo b'tashlumei nisko. What's the difference between chafti b'nisko and tashlumei nisko? So first we take a look at Rashi. On the first line under the Gemara text, the first of the wide lines, at the end of the line, Benizkoi lo kotoni, Delevi mashmash yeshalim shor gomur chai, v'hu yitol es hanavela. The Mishnah doesn't say Benizko. What would that have implied? That the owner of the pit, he's the mazik. Then the animal that fell in died. Had the Mishnah said, Chafti Beniskoi, that would have told us that the owner of the pit pays the full value of the animal that was killed. And in the event that he would pay the full value of the animals killed, the owner of the pit would keep the animal corpse for himself. But that's not what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said, Chafti Betashlume Nisko. Rashi continues. The mashma hashloma. The term tashlum means making up the balance, the difference. Shito nizak es anavela. In a case like that, the owner victim, would have taken the corpse. And the owner of the pit would add the balance between the current value of the corpse and the value of the animal while alive. So if you had, let us say, just to throw out arbitrary numbers, if you had an animal that was worth $100 when alive, the corpse is worth $25, the term Tashlumei Nisko would tell us that the owner of the pit would pay $75, so that the the victim of the damage, the owner, he would be getting, he would have in his pocket now a total of $100 of damage. The corpse, 25, and the balance, the difference, 75 in cash. So this is what we learn by the term Tashlume Nizko. Tanina Leha Detan Rabbanan. Our Mishnah bears out that which is taught in the following Tanaic source. Tashlume Nezek Melamed. The term Tashlume Nezek teaches me Shabailim Metaplim Vei. The owner of the animal, Metaplim Vei, means he takes the corpse. Mino Hani Mili. From where do we know that the owner of the animal that was damaged or killed, from where do we know that the owner of the animal takes the corpse? On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei / Mivne heading, diamonds appear. A diamond appears, paralleling the diamonds that appear in the Gemara text. Makoros, we will see sources, scriptural sources, Hamalamdim, that teach us, Shabailim Metaplim Binevela, that the owner of the animal takes the corpse. Shanizak, the one who is the victim of the damage, Noitel Es Anevela, Kechelik Me'atashlumen. He takes the corpse as part of the restitution. Vamazik mashlim as a yitra, and the offender pays the balance. So, where do we learn this idea from? We turn to the Gemara. Omar Rabbi Ami, the Omar Kraw, the Posuk says, and each one of these psukim comes from a specific context, so we'll note between the lines the context. This posuk comes from the case of a person who injures an animal. It says, Makin nefesh behema yishalmena. Al tikri yishalmena. Don't read the word as such, even though when we read the Torah in the from the Torah scroll, that's how you would read it. But nevertheless, as far as an understanding is concerned, Ela yashlimena. Yashlim is to make up the difference. So when a person damages an animal, the owner of the animal gets his damaged animal, and the offender pays the balance. Rav Kahana Amar Mehocha. From the following, we learn this idea. This is from a posuk that deals a paid bailey, person who's paid to watch an item. In this case, he's paid to watch an animal, and he was lax, he was irresponsible on the job. And it says, Im torof yitoref yevi'ehu eid hatrefa lo yishalem. That's the pasuk with the vowelization. However, the Torah itself doesn't have vowels, leaving room for the oral tradition to offer multiple meanings to words. And in this pasuk, instead of reading the word Eid HaTrefa, we read Ad Trefa Yishalem. Trefa Atzma Lo Yishalem. Up till the value of the damaged animal you pay, but the damaged animal itself, you don't pay for that. Rather, the owner gets it, and you pay the difference. Chizkiya Omar Mehocha. From the following, this pasuk deals with one animal that damaged another animal. It says, "Vahames yeloi lanizak." Lanizak means the owner of the damaged animal. So the pasuk is saying that the corpse goes to the owner of the animal. The offender pays the difference, the balance between the current value of the corpse, which he doesn't pay for; he simply gives the corpse to the owner, and the balance in terms of how much was the animal worth when it was alive. V'chein tona debei chizkia v'hamesi alo lanizak atomer lanizak o'enu elo lamazik. You say that the lo, the pronoun in the pasuk, and the corpse is given unto him, is the nizik. Maybe it's a reference to the offender, that he gets the corpse and pays the entire value of the animal. Amris lo kachoya. My lo kachoya. What do you mean by thusly it is not? Omar Abaye, I salkadaitoch nevela damazik havya. If you were to think that the corpse goes to the offender, and the phrase vamesia lo is addressing the mazik, the damager, lichtoiv rachmona shor tachas shor velishtok. Let the posuk simply write shor tachas shor, and stop at that point. Vamesia loy lomoli. Why does the posuk add the phrase vamesia lo? If it was simply shor tachas shor, that would have meant that you have to pay for an ox where there originally had been an ox. In other words, pay the full value, and the mazik would keep the corpse. But it doesn't say that. It says shor tachas shor v'hames yelo. The phrase v'hames yelo also appears in the pasuk. So what does that extra expression do? Shma mino lanizak. It comes to teach me that the owner of the animal gets the corpse and the offender pays the balance. Utsricha. And we need, in actuality, all three sources. You might want to take note of the long marking tsricha, which shows the extent of the Gemara that deals with proving the need for the Torah to write each one of these psukim and not leaving me on my own to conclude one topic from the other. The Gemara continues. De'i kosav rachmona makye behema yishamena. Had the Torah taught that case, and that posuk makye, actually the word nefesh appears here, it's a little bit abbreviated, but the pasuk said makin nefesh behema. Had we taught that, which was a case of a person damaging someone's animal. So mishum, and in that case, the pasuk says that the owner of the animal gets the keeps the animal, and the offender pays the balance. There, I would have thought that mishum de lo shchicha, it's unusual. It's unusual that a person damages an animal. Therefore, since it's an unusual case, the Torah is not so severe and stringent upon the offender to trouble himself with selling the corpse and paying the victim the entire cash value. Avol, we continuing in the Gemara, Avol treifa d'shricha, eima lo. But the situation of an animal falling victim to an attacking animal, treifa literally is a torn up animal. It's where a wolf, let us say, attacks someone's animal and kills it. There the form of damage, as opposed to a person hurting the animal, another animal hurts the animal, which is common. Eimo lo, there I would have thought that the mazik, in that case the shomer, who was lax on his job, has to pay the entire value. The mazik would take the corpse for himself, the shomer, the irresponsible shomer, would take the corpse for himself and pay the entire value. Therefore, tzricha, I need to teach that as not so. But even in that case, where the form of damage was common, the shomer, the beili, simply pays the balance while giving the corpse to the owner of the animal. V'yashmina trefa, and had we taught that that's the procedure and method of payment in the case of the lax guard, mishum de memela. There, the guard didn't do any actual damage. It happened memela, in a passive fashion, i.e., the wolf tore up the animal. The wolf attacked the animal and not the person. But in the case of a person of taking the offensive, hitting an animal, he proactively hurt the animal. So there, maybe we would not be so lax, not so lenient upon him, and insist that he pay the entire value of the victimized animal. The Ashminan, and therefore it was necessary to teach that even in that case, the attacking person only pays the balance while giving the corpse or the victimized animal to the owner. The Ashminan Hani Tarti, had we taught this leniency in law regarding these two cases, Ha Mishum Delo Shchicha, the case of Make Nefesh Behemah Shalmena, that's unusual that a person attacks, and the Ha Mishum Dimemela, the lax Shomer there, the Shomer himself did not in a proactive fashion hurt the animal, Avol Vahamesi Eloi, but in the case of that where that pasuk appeared, where one person's animal attacked the other person's animal. When we say person's animal, we're not talking about the wolf. The wolf is an unknown creature. Here we have Mr. A's ox goring Mr. B's ox. There, the shchicha, that kind of damage is common. It's more common than a person attacking an animal. U'biyodayim, it's considered proactive. In other words, your animal is something you have to watch. And if your animal actively does damage, it's like you did damage. So it's called biodayim. It's called proactive. Amal lo. Since you have two strikes against being lenient, maybe we should impose the severity of the law upon the owner of the attacking animal and make him pay the entire value of the corpse of the of that that is of the victimized animal, and the offender will keep the corpse. So, therefore, I need to tell you in that third scenario as well that the corpse is given to the owner of the animal, and the mere balance is what's paid by the offender. V'yashminan hameis yelo, and had we taught that case of shor, that's mazik ishor, mishum de mamona komazik. There, it's not the person that was mazik, it's the person's money, the person's possession, i.e., his ox that caused the damage. Avol hocha de begufa mazik emolo. But in the case of a person, let's say a guard, a shomer that's posha, it's as if he did the damage. He was lax. And I would assume the same thing in the first case of where the person himself did the physical damage. Wasn't his mamon doing the damage? Wasn't his possession? Was he himself doing the damage? So in those cases, I would have thought that's called begufo kamazik emolo, that we would not be lenient and insist that he pay the entire value of the animal that was victimized. Tzricha. Therefore, we need to teach each one of the cases. As you can see, without that, I would have thought that in that which is taught explicitly there, we would be lenient, but in the other cases, there was room for being stringent. Therefore, all cases need to be taught. Omar le Rav Kahana le Rav. Now, note we have a long question marking. Rav Kahana asks Rav, Elotayma de Kosev Rachmon v'amesi elo. The reason that our payment scheme is, as we said, corpse given to owner and offender paying only the balance, is the reason for ruling thusly only because the Torah said Vamesi Elo, Ha Lav Hochi Have Amino Nevelo Demazik Havio. Without that, would I have thought that the offender must take the corpse and have to pay the entire cash value? I wouldn't have thought that. Even without the pasuk, I would have known that the offender delivers the corpse, or I should say, I would have known that the payment on the part of the offender is for the difference in value, not the entire value. And why is that? As follows. Hashto I islei l'didei kama trefos. Let us say we had an offender, the mazik, that had a stockpile of animal corpses, and that has value. Animal corpses, we don't have to tell you, can be processed into many different products, from leather to animal feed, etc. So even without the pasuk telling me that the owner of the victimized animal gets the corpse, I would have known anyway. Had the offender had a stockpile of corpses, Yohivle, he could have made the entire payment in corpses. Diomar Mar. As we've learned in the past, the pasuk says Yoshiv, and from that we learn Larabois Shove Kesef Vafilu Subin, that a mazik, an offender, must make restitution in not only cash value, he can make it in cash equivalency, even if it happens to be subin, wheat bran, which is something that's as a product itself is not in limited quantities, it's not worth very much, but a large quantity of subin would cover the value of a large amount of restitution. So d'day mibaya, when you're talking about the corpse of an animal already owned by the victim, is that's even more obvious that the victim will take the corpse, and the owner, that is the offender, will pay the mere balance. So do I need v'hamesia lo? Do I need these psukim that we saw above to tell me that that the offender pays just the balance? It's kind of obvious from the yoshiv source, from the pasuk that we just noted. Loi nitzricha elo lepchas nevela. That which we cited verses above, that the nizak gets the corpse, it's a reference to pchas nevela. What's pchas nevela? Pchas nevela is the depreciation of the animal between the point of death and the point of legal decision, court, let's say court appearance and legal decision. So that if there, and it could often be that the animal was, let us say, just by mere example, random numbers, we cite an example, an animal that's alive, you'll notice on the side we have a little chart, a live animal is worth $100. When it's killed, the value of the corpse is $50, so that the value of the damage is $50. That's the value of the damage at the point of animal's death. There might be additional depreciation from the point of animal's death to the point of din, the point of court appearance, another $30 in depreciation. The decomposition sets in, the meat value goes down, so that a corpse at the Shas Hadin might be worth only $20. So there was a depreciation of 30 additional dollars. That is called the Pchas Nevela. So that the Pusik is saying that loss is upon the owner of the animal. He must absorb that loss. The offender having to pay only for the actual damage between a live animal and the point of animal's death. The Gemara asks, Lema Pchas Nevela Tanoihi. Shall we say that the issue of depreciation is actually a machloikes tanoim, a tanaic disagreement? Desanya. The pasuk cited here might be familiar. We had it just before by a shomer sochar who was lax on his job, a paid guard, bailey of to watch an animal. Im toro fi tore fi veu erid. The guard claims that the animal was attacked, was torn up by a wolf. The Gemara continues at the top of Yud Aleph, Daf Yud Aleph, Yavi Eidim Shenifrafa Ba'inus Upater, according to the first opinion, that Pasuk is telling me that if the wolf attack was beyond the powers of guarding of the Shomer, he will bring witnesses that it was attacked Ba'inus by circumstances beyond his control, and thereby be exempt. A Shomer Sochar, although he has to bear responsibility in the case of theft or loss, not in the case of Ones, cases that are beyond, cases of damage beyond his control. So Yaveu Aid means he brings witnesses that that is in fact what happened, and he would thereby be exempt. Abasholoimer Yavi Arduda Lebezdin. Abashol says that the Yaviu Aid, the word aid, is a reference to the animal corpse. He brings the animal corpse to the court. The court will evaluate how much, what's the value of the corpse, and they'll be able to calculate the depreciation that the corpse experienced from the time of its killing till the present, till its appearance in court. My love, behol komiflegi, is it not so then that the point of argument between these two opinions in this source is as follows? The more sovar, pas nevela denizakave, Abishol, who darshaned the word aid as aduda, animal corpse, presented to court for evaluation, etc., is an opinion that holds that the depreciation of that corpse must be absorbed by the victim. Umor Sovar, the Tanakama, who didn't say that at all, he says that the Tanakama would hold the Mazik Have, that the Mazik, the offender, would have to cover that as well. So that in our previous example, according to the Tanakama, if the animal was worth alive $100, and at the point of court decision, the animal is worth a mere $20, the corpse is worth $20, the offender would have to pay $80. So should we say then? You notice that the long question comes to an end over here. The question being, shall we say that the issue of pas nevela, corpse depreciation between point of death and appearance in court, is a tanaic disagreement? Who bears responsibility for that depreciation? The Gemara says, lo, that's not the point of argument here at all. De kule alma de nizak. Everyone will agree. Even the Tanakama will agree that the Nizak has to absorb that loss, that depreciation. Ooh, and so then if that's a point of agreement, so then what's the point of disagreement? V'hocha b'torach nevela komifligi. Torach nevela means the transportation of the animal from where it died to the owner of the animal. Who has to cover those expenses? The Rashi further down from here says, "V'torach nevela lahavio mimokom shemesa shom lemokom shoisa shom abashol sovar al hamaziku." According to this approach, Abba Shol will be the opinion that the transportation cost is upon the mazik, the offender. V'hotanya, and here you have a Tanaic source that supports. V'hotanya in this case means support. Achirim oimrim minayin sha'al bal habor l'halois shor miboro. From where do we know that it's the responsibility of the mazik, the owner of the pit in this case, to raise the corpse from the bottom of the pit? That as we said, that the mazik has to pay for that. Talmud Lomar, kesef yoshiv olov vehames. Cash must be returned to the owner and the corpse. So we're citing this Tanaic source to show that the issue that is of, let's say, of disagreement, the point of disagreement concerns the transportation, the movement of the corpse from the site where the damage took place to the owner. Omar le Abaye l'Rava, Hai Torach neve lo hechidami. What are the circumstances behind this case of Torach neve lo? The animal that was found at the bottom of a pit, and then we said that the owner of the pit has to pay the movement costs. If you were to think, Debabira Shavia Zuza ve'a Guda, Guda means the edge of the pit at the top, Shavia Arba, that at the bottom of the pit, the animal corpse is worth only one zuz, a denomination of money. And at the top, it's worth more, it's more accessible, and therefore it's worth more. Well, ki torach, there where the Baal HaBor is extending himself to bring it up, b'denafshe torach, he's doing it for his own good. He's thereby saving the amount of money he would have to pay. Of course, he's going to be giving the corpse to the owner of the animal. But if he's giving a more valuable corpse, being that it's already at the surface, he'll have to pay less in cash. Pay the balance will be less. I don't need a pasuk to tell me that scenario. It's obvious there that the owner of the pit is going to be interested in doing thusly. So, what is the case of Torach Nevela that I need a pasuk to tell me that it's upon the offender to trouble himself? Amar le lo tzricha. So Rava says to Abaye that no, it's necessary in the following case, the Bebiro Shav Yezuza, the Agudonami Shav Yezuza, that in the bottom of the pit it's worth one zuz, and at the edge, at the top, it's also worth one zuz. The Gemara asks, "Umi iko ki hai gavna?" Is there such a phenomenon where the market doesn't acknowledge the difference in value between greater difficulty of access and less difficulty? The Gemara says, "Yes, there is a phenomenon like that." In to Amri Imshi, people say, "Kshura, kshura is a beam, bemasa in town, bezuza, kshura bedabra zuza." A beam out in the fields is worth also a zuz. So there is this phenomenon of items that the transportation costs don't seem to figure very significantly in the value of that particular item. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading which reads Anoshim Shoinim, different people She chayovim b'tashlum, that are obligated in repaying and making restitution. Mi mehem chayav l'shalim tashlum mole, umi mehem as oisim lohem shumo ala chayfetz umishalim rak hayitro. Which of these people must make a full value restitution, where we don't evaluate, let's say, the item that was damaged? And which of the people that we'll see in the Gemara do we make an evaluation of the item damaged, and only the mere balance is paid, balance from original value to current depreciated item? On the side of the Gemara, we have a little diagram. We have Ein Shomin in the case of Ganav and Gazlan, in the case of theft. Different types of theft, we don't evaluate the item stolen. And in the case of Nezikin, in the case of damages, we do. What about in the case of someone who borrowed an item, a shoyel? Do we compare a shoyel to a ganav and gazlan, where no evaluation of damaged item is made, but rather the thief has to pay full restitution? Do we compare the shoal to the case of Nezikin, of damages, where only the balance is paid? Now the Gemara. Omar Shmuel, Ein. Now Shmuel opens up with a statement that doesn't reflect his own opinion, but rather a statement reflecting the the custom of judges. How do judges generally rule? And he says, Ein shomen lo legana velo legazlan, elo lenezikin. Evaluations of damaged items of the chifetz, the item in question, that type of evaluations of those items are not made in the case of theft, only in the case of damage. Va'ani Omer, Shmuel says, and I want to add, Va'ani Omer, and I say, Af L'Shoyel, the same with regard to a borrower, Va'abo Modeli, Rabo is Rav, Modeli agrees with me. What does Shmuel mean when he says, Af L'Shoyel? On our little diagram, you note that Shoyel might go this way or that way. From Shmuel's comment, when he says Af L'Shoyel, what is he adding Shoel to the category of Ein Shomen that we find by Ganav or Gazlan, or to the category of Shomen that we find by Nezikin? Ibaya Laho, the Gemara asks, Heichi Ka'omar, what is Shmuel saying? Af L'Shoyel Shomen V'Abba Moideli, that in addition to Nezikin, we do a Shuma, we do an evaluation also in the case of someone who borrowed an item and it became damaged, that the owner gets the damaged item back and we make an evaluation of how much the damaged item is worth and the balance alone is paid. O Dilma Hochi Ka'omar, maybe thusly Shmuel said, Vani Oimer Af L'Shoyel Ein Shomen. The word Af that Shmuel used in his original phrase was in addition to the first point, Ganav and Gazlan, the thieves, whereby we don't afford them the leniency of Shomen. So too in the case of Shoyel, and Abba Modeli and Rav would agree with me. So as far as what Shmuel's original statement was regarding the Shoel, there's this vagueness. So what are we to do? Let's try to resolve that. Ta Shma. Tahu Gavro de Shoel Nargo Mechavre. There was a man that borrowed. Now we dashed underline the word Shoel because this is the focus of our attention. What's the din regarding the Shoel? A borrower who returns a damaged item. He borrowed an axe from his friend, and it broke. Oslakame de Rav. We highlight Rav's name because Shmuel claimed that whatever he himself held, Rav would agree with it. So let's see what Rav said. Amale zil shlim le nargum alya. Go pay him the value of a new axe. So if we were to stop here, and we're not going to stop here, but if we were, so then full restitution is made in the case of a borrower, and no evaluation is made of the broken item. Shma mina ein shomen. So from here we would conclude that Rav's opinion is ein shomen, thereby categorizing the shoyel along with ganav and gazlan. Adarabba, to the contrary, midi amri le Rav Kahana ve Rav Asi le Rav. From the fact that Rav Kahana and Vasi were associates of Rav, they were Talmid Chovers of Rav, they said to Rav, Dina Hachi, is that the way to rule? Vishosik, and Rav remained silent. Apparently they challenged Rav on his ruling, and he didn't respond. He remained silent. Shmami no Shaman. We would conclude that in the case of Shoyel, we would evaluate the item, and only the balance would be paid to the owner. No conclusion then on the topic as to what did Shmuel say when he said Af Shoyel. Itmar Omar Ulomar Belozer. Now you notice this double underline. This highlights a series of memros on the side of the Gemara under our Mivne heading. We indicate memros shel Ulomar Belozer. We're going to be learning only the first one as it relates directly to our discussion. The series marking though will clearly show how this series of Ula comments in the name of Rabbi Elazar continues clear down Omid Beis. We're going to be numbering seven of these Ula Omar Rabbi Elazar comments. In fact, Ula and reference to Rabbi Elazar even continues on to Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. But as far as the structure is concerned, Ula Amar Rabbi Elazar appears seven times, and we're focusing only on the first as it directly relates to our discussion. Itmar Omar Ula Amar Rabbi Elazar Shomen Leganav Ula Gazlan. We evaluate in the case of Ganav and Gazlan, and the item would be returned, and if there's any depreciation, so it's only the depreciation that the Ganav and Gazlan, these thieves, are responsible for paying. Rav Popi Omar Ein Shomen. Then when it comes to Ganav and Gazlan, we don't make that evaluation, but rather the stolen item will, that the Ganav will keep, and the even if it's experienced depreciation, if it hasn't experienced depreciation, it's reasonable to assume that he returns the stolen item. The pasuk in the Torah itself indicates that v'heishiv es hagzeila sher gozal, but assuming depreciation, so then according to Rav Papi, there would be no shuma leniency, and the ganav and gazlan would have to pay in full. V'hilchaso ein shomin lo lagana v'lo lagazlan avol l'shoyel shomin kiderav kahana v'ravasi. The Gemara itself rules no evaluation of item in the case of theft, but in the case of shoyel, the borrower who is returning a damaged item, their evaluation is made, and the balance alone is paid by the borrower in accordance with Rav Kahana Ravasi, who we saw earlier in their reaction to Rav and Rav's subsequent silence. The little arrow on the side of the Gemara indicates where we saw them, just a couple lines up. We've spilled over quite a bit in terms of our Daf Yomi structure or quota. Nevertheless, the topic of Shomen extended till this point, hence this would be a reasonable point to pause. We did already note that the series of Ulam, Rabbi Elazar, Halachas continues, but you'll notice that the continuation of these teachings has no direct halachic relevance to anything that we've seen before. In other words, new cases from topics outside the realm of Nezikin altogether will appear. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.